NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Patty Hirsch. And how high do you like your oil prices, Stacey?
I don't like them that high, honestly. They're getting up there now, though.
They are getting up there. And they're high right now, of course, because the market is tight. That's the technical term, which basically means there's lots of demand for oil, but just not enough supply.
And there are more than a few things behind this tightness. There is soaring demand as economies all around the world pull out of the pandemic. There's all the supply chain issues that we've talked about on the show.
There's also a shortage in natural gas, which means a lot of energy providers have switched from burning gas to burning oil. And there's the resistance by the OPEC Plus cartel to pump more oil than it is right now.
And we have this concern about a major geopolitical event that could take additional supplies off the market.
This is Halima Croft. She's the global head of commodity strategy and Middle East and North Africa research at RBC Capital Markets. And she is, of course, talking about Russia, which is the second largest producer of oil in the world after the US.
And there are concerns that if you have an escalation in this standoff with Ukraine, that you could have a significant reduction in Russian energy supplies.
It's this headline threat of a possible war in Ukraine that is really jerking prices around right now. But today we want to look behind the headlines at another more fundamental factor that's contributing to this tightness in the market. And it's happening right here in the US. It's called backwardation.
Which is naturally the opposite of forwardation, I assume.
It's actually the opposite of contango, I would say, but it's a highly technical term, backwardation. It's used by traders in the oil futures market. And understanding it can go a long way to explaining why the cost of heating oil and gasoline are so high right now.
Backwardation.
Yeah, don't get it twisted, Stacey.
I will try not to.
Coming up after the break.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Go to Indeed.com/indicator to claim your $75 sponsored job credit before March 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
Oil is basically priced in two ways, right? There's the spot price, which is what it costs to buy a barrel of oil right now, today.
Like on the spot.
Right on the spot. Thank you. And then there's the future price, which is what a barrel of oil will cost you at some point in the future if you lock in the price today. Now, without getting all technical about this, the future price is what oil traders expect oil prices to be months or even years from now.
And when the global economy is expanding, like it is right now, those future prices are usually higher than the spot price, which you would expect, right? Because more growth means more future demand. Halima Croft from RBC Capital Markets says in a market that is as tight as this one, prices should rise in the future.
People are back on the road. You know, they're getting on airplanes and there are not enough barrels out there to potentially meet this demand as it is expected to grow.
But right now, prices are not higher in the future. Right now, you can strike a deal to buy oil in 6 months for less than it will cost you to buy it on the spot today.
Patty, that seems backwards.
The market is in backwardation. Prices are expected to fall in the future, not rise. And there are a couple of reasons for this. The first is that there were a lot of people who bought oil during the pandemic when it was super cheap, and they stored it. And now, with prices rising, they are cashing out.
Buy low, sell high.
Exactly. Smart people.
Market mantra.
Market mantra. But as oil heads towards 100 bucks a barrel and more sellers emerge, there is now the possibility of a glut on the market. Added to which, Halima says, there's speculation that some Middle Eastern countries may start pumping more as well.
Will Saudi Arabia bring more barrels onto the market? Will the UAE and Kuwait and Iraq, I call them the Gang of Four. I think those are the four countries that really have additional capacity.
Traders are watching all of this and they're saying, huh, well, if all these people are selling their inventory and maybe some OPEC nations are going to release more oil, that means there could be a lot more oil for sale later this year.
And if there is more oil for sale, but demand is about the same, then the prices are going to fall. And so they mark those future prices as lower.
And you might say, big deal. Traders are making bets that oil prices are going to fall. So what?
Traders going to trade.
Yes, but it's not just oil traders who are watching those futures. Oil producers and investors are as well. And right now, they're looking at that backwardation, that expectation that oil prices will fall in future. And they're worrying that if they spend a lot of money on building rigs that take a year or more to come online, oil prices are not going to be high enough at that point to make that investment worthwhile.
And it's not like this hasn't happened before. 2 years ago, the U.S. was producing 13 million barrels of oil a day. Prices were like $50-ish dollars a barrel. Gas prices were low. Oil firms were making money. Everyone was happy. And then?
When the pandemic hit and we had this massive collapse in demand and oil prices temporarily going negative, there were real questions about would we ever see 13 million barrels of U.S. production again.
See, oil investors lost a lot of money during that collapse. And Halima says they're now super cautious. They're holding companies back from restarting the wells they idled during the pandemic and from drilling new ones. It's why we're still not even close to producing what we did before the pandemic.
One of the phenomenons that we've seen recently has been calls from investors for producers to exercise capital discipline, to return more money to shareholders. And companies that have shown a fondness for, you know, putting the money into the ground have been punished by shareholders.
So that reluctance to put money in the ground, to invest in drilling rigs and extraction pumps, is a big reason why the U.S. has so little control over oil prices right now. We don't have enough infrastructure online, and we don't have the kind of easy-to-tap underground reserves that the Gang of Four countries do. That means we do not have the ability to just flip a switch and turn on an oil spigot and bring the price of oil down.
Add to that the other disincentives facing the American oil business, like increased regulation, concerns about climate change, corporations' stated commitment to environmental concerns, and it's not surprising that investors are a wee bit reluctant when it comes to jumping into the oil patch. Halima says the money might convince them.
I think the important dynamic to be watching right now is, does the current price environment really encourage more drilling in the United States? And will, you know, investors give companies a pass for investing more and increasing output?
She says oil companies are slowly bringing more capacity online, but it'll take a while before we see the effects of that increase, maybe not to the end of the year. As for just turning on the wells that have been idled over the last year or so, it's not that simple, and it's certainly not cost-free.
Yes. In fact, the LA Times Center for Public Integrity study looked at wells in California and found that once an oil well had been dormant for just 10 months, there was a 50-50 chance that it would never produce oil again. And even if we do get back to pumping like we were before the pandemic, Halima says it probably will not do much to take the edge off high prices. She expects global demand to rise by 4.3 million barrels a day by the end of the year.
Maybe we should hold on to that barrel of oil that Planet Money bought a while longer. I don't suppose you know where they put it, do you, Stacey?
Maybe it's back at the office.
Back at the office.
Maybe it's at my cubicle desk.
This episode was produced by Brittany Cronin with help from Isaac Rodriguez. It was fact-checked by Corey Bridges. Our senior producer is Viet Le. Our editor is Kate Kincannon. And The Indicator is a production of NPR. Okay, we're back. Wordation.